didn't change, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are...
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. Hello and welcome. It's the week of the Elite Eight. It is Thursday. Caleb, you got the date for us today, don't you?
Yeah, Thursday, May 19th. And hey, Dan, what did one flag say to the other?
I don't know. What?
Nothing. It just waved.
And we are kicking the D3 pod off with Caleb's daily calendar and dad jokes. But more importantly, we have a loaded episode ready to preview the Elite Eight and Final Four weekends, go back and hit the Sweet 16 and round of 32, a few games in review, and man, I'm excited. Caleb, how you feeling?
I'm so pumped, man. This was an awesome weekend of LACs. This is what we've been building for this entire year, and to kind of see it come to fruition and be able to watch all the games this weekend was just so surreal. I was so excited to watch it all through and excited to break it down here with you.
Yeah, last weekend was epic. This weekend is going to be the same. Before we dive on in, I have one big question for you.
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel like you're letting the people down by not road tripping with me this weekend?
A little bit. It is a little heartbreaking to not be able to venture to one of these two great venues. I know you're going back and forth trying to decide, but it is a heartbreaker. But hey, I'm going to be up in Connecticut in a wedding for a old teammate and roommate and good friend. So looking forward to being a part of that. Definitely will be catching the games on the side, on the phone action. And be following along as much as I can throughout the weekend. But very jealous of you.
Did you ask him why he would schedule his wedding on this weekend? Did he not have foresight?
He's been away in the Navy for a couple years, so I think he forgot how this whole lacrosse scheduling things works. So partially his fault, but I will give him a pass for defending our country. But yeah. Yeah, a tough pass, but yeah, we'll give it to him.
All right. Well, you enjoy your time this weekend, and I will do the same. I really still don't know where I'm going to go. It's weird because we have, if I just had to pick and go, wherever, I think the first, my instinct is to go north and go, I can't pass up on Salisbury Tufts. I've never seen that matchup before, in person. That just seems like too epic to pass on. The weird thing about it, though, is we have a freelancer who's done work with Inside Lacrosse in the past and actually did a whole bunch of the Division III stuff. While we were playing and coaching, I used to read his stuff in Ken Stockman. And so he actually lives in Rochester. So he's pretty much already on the scene. And so we might be in a situation where he can help us out and cover those games up there, which would have me go south so that we can actually have somebody in both spots rather than just being totally front loaded with both Ken and I up there. So not exactly sure what we're going to end up doing, but either way, I'm just fired up for the weekend and really looking forward to getting out and catching out whichever site I end up at.
Yeah. I know the South has a special place in your heart to go watch York. So if you can make it down there, I think that would be my bet. Just if I'm speaking from the heart, but you are right that I think Salisbury Tufts is going
to
be.
I'm putting pressure on to road me. I've hit up other teammates of ours. I've hit a Salisbury guy that I said hey, if you're down to road trip, we'll go north. I'll go so that you can catch your Seagulls. And I've hit up a CNU alum. And said we gotta go, and he lives right around the corner from me too, and his excuse is awful. He has to study.
What? Study in the car.
That's exactly what I said. I was we'll take turns driving. I can be doing some writing, you can in some film work, and while you drive a little bit, then we'll switch and you can be studying and I'll drive. And he's just I gotta study, man. You changed. You never would have done that before.
What a nerd. For sure. Hey, before we get into it here, what's your number one road trip snack? What do you got to have by your side before you get going?
So I'll get a big water, a big Gatorade, a small Red Bull, because I don't need I don't need much caffeine and energy. I've already kind of functioned on high. And then I need Reese's Pieces. And if they don't have Reese's Pieces, I'll settle for the small, like, Reese's Cups.
But okay. That's
my move right there.
Yeah, Pieces are great. A great choice, man. I think I got to go gummy worms, personally. I'm a big gummy worm guy. You get a nice bag of those, you can just pop them while you're going down the road.
Yeah.
Nothing better. That or chocolate-covered pretzels. Can't go wrong.
I should add a caveat. We're talking long drive here, right? Long drive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because if we're talking doing intermediate, I would do take fives. Yeah.
Oh, those are fun. I like this, but no, we're talking like three plus hours.
Yeah, like for when I drive either to Rochester or Newport News, I'm going to grab those first three beverages that I said, and then whatever the mood, whatever my vibe is in that moment on Reese's.
I can't wait to hear what it ends up being.
I'll let you know. Maybe I'll let you know on Twitter.
Oh, give the people the breakdown on Twitter.
Seems like
give it to them live.
Yeah. All right. So you think we should get into it here?
Let's do it. Let's dive in.
I'm sure the people are ready. All right. And so we probably can't hit every single matchup from the last weekend, but let's start with Sunday. And then along the way, we'll hit some of those Saturday matchups that set the table for the ones that we're hitting. To get us started, let's go ahead. We'll hit the lone upset of Sunday. And actually, it was weird. Every post site that the committee selected advanced except for Dickinson, where there was the upset with Gettysburg taking that one 17-7. And that one was pretty much all bullets the entire game. What'd you see there?
Yeah, same thing that you were just saying. A lot of bullets the whole game. They started off hot and got that lead early. And I kind of thought it was going to be one where Dickinson finally had the chance to battle back and show that they were a strong team too, and they were undefeated and they deserved to be in that spot they were in. And it just kind of never came. You know, Gettysburg kept pouring it on, and when Dickinson did get anything, it was short-lived by Gettysburg's runs. So props to Gettysburg for kind of figuring out the opponent finally. Third time's the charm is what we kind of like to say. And they got it going and figured it out, so props to them. Looking forward to kind of seeing if they can continue this momentum against Union. We'll get into it later. But it was fun to see. Did want to shout out Thurston there. He had a great game. For Dickinson, even in the loss still. And I think he's going to be one that we're going to be watching quite a bit here moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. So he and Owen Porter both finished their freshman seasons with incredible point totals for freshmen, and started and were just staples of that offense and, you know, deserve a lot of credit. The other thing that I think that was really interesting about this game is, you know, those midfielders that we've kind of harped on all season as being really dangerous and getting downhill just never really got going in this one. And, you know, it ended up hurting them in the end. Gettysburg did a really good job of owning those matchups and playing those guys with physicality so that they didn't have to slide too much. And then on the other end of the ball, Dickinson was like sliding all over the place. And they naturally kind of want to help, and that's kind of their identity on that side of the ball, is that they want to slide and create pressure with you know, double teams that way, rather than, you know, the traditional Salisbury and Cabrini and you know, that Maryland style of like glue up and not really try and slide and just like own matchups as much as possible. So Dickinson kind of had the opposite of that, and I felt like at times it ended up giving Gettysburg offense. And they were prepared for it. You know, they had good, well-timed cuts inside where they could hit feeders out of it. Anytime there was like a bad Dickinson approach out of a recovery or something like that, Gettysburg was able to get to the middle and get to dangerous spots. And so they deserve a lot of credit for that. You know, and like you said, that every single time there was an answer from Dickinson, Gettysburg had one right back. And so Dickinson would score one. I think there was actually only one instance in the entire game of Dickinson scoring back-to-back goals. So every single time they scored, Gettysburg had an answer for him, and, you know, deserve a lot of credit for that. And just kind of brought an edge to the game that I didn't really see coming.
Yeah, definitely. And just another quick shout out here for Dickinson. You know, they only did have seven goals on the day, but six of those seven goals were all unassisted. So, I mean, they really weren't working the ball around too much to work for good shots. They were kind of just kind of taking it on their own, and kind of showed that Gettysburg just had the better game plan and came out ready to dominate. So right. Good
and
for that.
The reason that the ball wasn't able to cycle is because they just, like, Gettysburg was really just doing everything they could not to have to go, whether it was like a quick show and get back or just like, you know, staying glued up, but they weren't giving that offense any action out of quick ball movement because they weren't really sliding to anything.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a good point.
So that one was really interesting. And now Gettysburg advances. Dickinson, you know, it obviously had a great season. Anytime you lose in the first game of the season is anytime your first loss of the season ends your season, you know you had a great year.
Definitely, yeah. Nothing to be, ashamed of there. They played really hard this whole year, and they really showed it. Just came up kind of short at the end against a team that they've played a lot this year, so they knew each other well. So, you know, nothing really you can do there, just kind of how the cards fall.
Yeah, and, you know, like we've said, they have a bunch of youth there, and so obviously it's a bright future in Carlisle.
Definitely. Can't wait to see what the future holds for them. They're always good, though. You know them.
Say that again?
They're always good. They're always up in the top 15, top 20 every year. They just reload. They don't really need time to rebuild.
Yep. Yeah. And so that'll be really interesting next year, and I'm sure they'll have another good freshman class. It could be interesting to see, you know, exactly how good. And we could be in a situation where they have a whole ton of freshmen and sophomores running around. You know, it could be, really bright there.
Definitely.
All right. And so let's go ahead. We'll shift. I kind of have a setup to keep bouncing back and forth from north to south. So our next game here, we're going to go up and we're going to talk about Bowdoin and St. Lawrence. How much of this one did you get to catch?
Oh, I watched this whole thing, Dan. This was another one that I thought was going to be a closer to be a nail biter. And kind of back and forth a little bit more. And it wasn't that. I mean, St. Lawrence definitely powered through some of those Bowdoin runs and kept it close. You get that with Wilhelm in goal. But, end of the day, I think Bowdoin was just the better team, and they actually came out and played like it. We haven't seen them do that too much against these Amhersts and Tufts as of late, but they are doing it at tournament time, which is when you need to do it. So props to them to coming out and playing hard. And St. Lawrence, you know, great season. Just, you know, came up kind of short here against a great team. So, again, similar to Dickinson, nothing to kind of be ashamed of. They played their hearts out there.
Yeah, so coming away from this one, I kind of have two storylines, which is so how healthy or how injured is Donald Mullane, right? And so he takes a hit in that first game on Saturday, and never comes back in that game. Looks like he's limping around a bit, and I know that earlier in the season when he missed his stretch, it was from a lower leg injury. So, you know, this is tons of speculation here, but it looked like he potentially re-aggravated that. So hopefully he can get healthy and be a big part this weekend. But we saw in this game without him for the whole time, you know, that if Patrick Fitzgerald has to go down there and play attack, they're still plenty fluent and really dangerous on that side of the ball and, you know, really just explode right from the start offensively, which kind of leads me to my second point here. St. Lawrence comes in and probably doesn't put the same, you know, type of defensive effort out that they have been for most of the season here. So they came into that weekend at third in the defensive efficiency ratings, and now they're sitting here out of the tournament and at seventh, which, you know, is obviously still great. But gave up way too many goals on Saturday, and therefore had way too close of a game. Their guys had to be running way too long, and ended up giving up 14 to Cortland. So then on day two, you're not rested, you're not really as prepared as you would hope to be, and you end up giving up 17 in back to back. So in back to back games, you're giving up high point totals on that defense, which I did not see coming, you know, in my personal bracket, I'll let one out of the bag here, but I had St. Lawrence advancing out of this pot, heading to CRIT for another round, you know, but, you know, props to Bowden, you know, made all the plays that they needed to defensively, to make sure that they had plenty of opportunities on offense. And then Ethan Barnard at the X, you know, ensuring possession, making sure that those guys have plenty of opportunities to find the back of the net. And they took advantage of it.
Definitely. Yep. And we'll get into it here a little bit later, but definitely looking to see how the Bowden defense can kind of match up and prepare for, you know, the number one offense with RIT. So that'll be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we get to previews, let's just keep it rolling with recaps here. One of the teams advancing, to no surprise, is Salisbury. They advance using a 12-4 run and take down Cabrini by a score of 13-8. I watched a whole bunch of this one. I know you did too. Why don't you kick us off with some of your thoughts, and then I'll pick up something after that.
Yeah, I was pretty excited watching this one, man. This was pretty sweet. I saw the similar game as to when, you know, Salisbury was playing them the first time around, and they had the same game plan. You know, they kind of got Salisbury out of rhythm and made them play their game, which you don't see happen to Salisbury too often. And when that does happen, it gets Salisbury out of their game and exposes them a little bit. So Cabrini did that the first part of the game here, and it led to a very tight game. And then Salisbury, of course, you know, I think at the end of the day they were the more talented team, and probably the better coached team. No offense to any coaches out there, you know, on both sides, they're great, but you know, Berkman has been around for this long for a reason. He's good at making adjustments and getting his guys in the right spot when things aren't going well, and sure enough, he did that against a great opponent and came out on top and sparked that run that they had, which kind of led them through the rest of the game. And I'm sure they're feeling pretty good about this heading into a tough game against Tufts.
Yeah, so weird situation where they come out and their backs are kind of against the wall in the first quarter, down 4-1, and Cabrini's playing with all this energy, and you're like, you know, here we go. This could be one of these times where a team like Cabrini, as we've seen, like, they literally won the national championship getting hot at the right time, you know, and like, could it have happened again, jump out to a 4-goal lead, take down somebody that they potentially shouldn't, you know, and then all of a sudden it just is, you know, one Salisbury goal, another Salisbury goal. And it's kind of their guys that get them going. It's Bromwell who scores, and then it's Ferrer who scores. And one thing Salisbury does that potentially better and like more deliberately than any team in the country, once they find a matchup that they like, they will just pick on that to death. Like, I'm sure you recall in those games, like, if anybody was ever getting ready to dodge Conrad, they'd like somebody from the sideline or like Garbarino inside was yelling like, no, swing it, we're dodging 30, talking about Tolbert. Like, they would just like, they were so deliberate about it, kind of like, I mean, literally, like, mental bullying before you even get physically bullied by getting dodged, you know. And
that's just part of the game plan that we talk about with them. You know, that's their style. They get into your head from the start of the game, and they make you play their game. So, you know, that's what they do.
It also takes a ton of discipline and good coaching for them to realize it, and for somebody to, you know, like, have the balls to like get everybody on the same page and make sure that like everybody's on the same, like, just to make sure that everybody's on the same page and moving the right ways when it happens, and getting the ball to where they feel like they have their best matchups. You know, like, everybody talks about discipline being like a defensive side of the ball thing, but Salisbury's got a discipline to them on the offensive side of the ball as well, with, you know, picking the right matchups, going at who they want to go at, picking, you know, high percentage shots, working for the best shot in possessions, and not just taking things early. So I ultimately, where I was going with this is, I think they ended up liking their Ferrer matchup, and so they just go to him over and over and over again. And I don't know that they like him, his matchup, more than like necessarily against the pole that was guarding him, or more against like Nestler just not being able to see the ball out of his stick.
Yep, definitely. And it was tough to see that because, you know, Nessler has had such a pretty good season here this year. But yeah, you know, when you got a matchup going like that, and kind of when you get a guy that's hot and can kind of hide the ball well and is getting it in the goal, you got to keep feeding that. And that's what Salisbury did. You're right there.
I'm also interested in your perspective on this, but I have a theory that for goalies, shots up the hash coming from X versus down the alley, not just because they're closer to the goal, but because they're just so much harder to read, just have a much higher percentage chance of going, regardless of if they're just like painted in the corner or anything. And that's how Ferreira gets so many of his opportunities, is coming up the hash from X. And it can be with either hand, where now he's just like turning and his whole back was to the goal. And so Nessler never even really saw it before the ball was on him.
Yeah, that's definitely a you know, tracking situation where, you know, if you have a guy coming down the alley, you're tracking the ball for 5, 6, 7 seconds before he shoots it, and you got a pretty good home reading on it. Where if a guy's coming from X, you know, maybe you're trying to organize the defense behind you and get guys in the right position. So you're not really tracking the ball till, you know, 2, 3 seconds before the guy shoots. So I think you're right there. It is not only that you are getting a little bit of a closer shot, but the goalie's not getting as much time to read it when you do those quick dodges from X. So good for Farrar from noticing it. And, you know, he's good at putting it away, but maybe something that, you know, the Garzone can look at and say, hey, we need to get set up a lot earlier. Farrar's got it behind in order to make a successful save there.
Yeah, and we're going to get to it, but I don't know how much zone we're even going to see them play. They've been really just like harping their zone and have been comfortable in it and have gotten a lot better in it as the year has gone on. And so it'll be interesting to see how much, you know, matching up like that we'll even end up seeing.
Yeah, that's very true.
All right, so let's keep it going with some scores here. Like I said, we're set up to keep bouncing back and around. So we'll head back up north. Let's talk Union 21, Western New England 11. I've seen a good bit of this one and watched the Western New England game Saturday where they upset Lynchburg. And so I'll kick it to you. Let's get some of your thoughts here on Western New England or Union.
Yeah.
However you want to start.
Yeah, you know, just jumping back real quick to their upset win with Lynchburg, that, you know, that was a pretty intense game. And I know you've kind of been on top of the Western New England train there. So props to you for knowing that, but was kind of tough to see them beat your Hornets. Yep. I could imagine that.
I was excited for them, but at the same time, like, I guess I shouldn't say excited for them in the moment. Like, I wasn't that excited for them in the moment, but like, I was excited that they were a good team and excited that they won their conference, so we're going to have a chance at the tournament. And then when I saw the bracket and saw that they were going to have to play Lynchburg, I was like, oh no. Thanks. I'm either going to be wrong because they're not going to get their first round win, but Lynchburg will win. So like, I'll be fine with it. Or I'm going to be right, but it'll be at the expense of the Hornets, which I don't want that either. So like, it was kind of a lose-lose situation for me.
Yeah, there was really no outcome where you could have prevailed here, but you know, I think it's pretty cool for them. You know, it's a great story and a great bonding experience for those guys to go out with kind of an upset win there. So shout out to them for winning that game. But yeah, this Union Western New England game was all Union. We saw what Peter Burns can do. I've been talking about him all year. I know that you might not even think he's the best player on their team. But, you know, I think he's very deserving of the accolades he's been getting this postseason. And we saw it in this game here. I mean, 21-11, the guy, Peter Burns, has 9 points on 7 goals, like just absolutely insane. So props to them. Union's rolling. They're another team I don't really want to play right now. So it's definitely going to be an intense matchup against Gettysburg this weekend. We'll have to see what kind of goes on there. But yeah, props to them for rolling here and looking forward to kind of see how they play it out.
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to hit more on Union as we keep rolling. But like you said, Western New England, you know, obviously out of the tournament at this point, but strung together a first round win. Really cool to see some of those older guys, some grad students who came back for this year, you know, some seniors kind of make a push and really you know, put towards the end of their careers. You know, it'll be interesting to see, and it's impossible to know how many right now are all going to be coming back, you know, and it'll be interesting to see exactly who does and how that team kind of progresses moving forward. But, you know, it's really cool for some of these teams that, you know, are a little bit under the radar or not necessarily nationally known to come in and with an older group of guys get a big win. So that's, you know, cool to see.
Yeah, big shout out to them.
All right, and let's keep rolling here. I'm breaking my rule. We're staying in the North. This one was heartbreaking in terms of, like, not necessarily from, like, a result standpoint, but from, like, the fan in me was really hoping for a good one here, and it did not deliver with Tufts 22, St. John Fisher 8. It really felt literally like Tufts just pulled the Happy Gilmore, like, oh, yeah, that'll be a good one. Like, just thumbs down and, like, spit in my face. Yeah, totally. This is going to be an awesome game.
Yeah, I had the same thoughts, Dan. I actually texted my team that of you know, fifth and sixth graders that I coach, and I was like, hey, if anybody's got a free afternoon, 4 p.m., this one's going to be electric. Make sure you tune in. And yeah, I think I may have some disappointed parents that they cleared their schedule for that. But nonetheless, I mean, it was a great offensive showing if you like to see one team score a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's always entertaining. Like, regardless of the game, there's going to be some entertaining stuff that happens.
100%. I don't think it's all for loss, but, you know, it was definitely not the game that it was building up to be. But, you know, end of the day, St. John Fisher, you know, great run. They had a great year and had a lot of good players there. Definitely want to shout out Ian Evans and Nicholas Miller. I know you want to get into them a little bit, but they were awesome this year. So shout out to them. But, you know, they just played Tufts at the wrong time. I've been saying it for, you know, a couple weeks now. When Tufts kind of got down, we were talking about them slipping a little bit. And since then, they've been on a roll. And I think I said it 3 weeks ago, like, this is not a Tufts team that I want to play, kind of how they're shaking out. And sure enough, right now, I mean, they come up against a good St. John Fisher's team and just absolutely destroy them. So props to Tufts for rolling right now. I think they're an absolute wagon that I would not want to play. So we'll see kind of how this turns out moving forward.
Yeah, and one storyline out of this one was just the face-off play. You know, you had Joe Post, who I think we expected to come in and ensure that St. John Fisher had more possessions than they ended up having. And I think right from the get-go, when Tufts was able to generate a bunch of extra possessions from the face-off X and just making sure that their guys had the ball rather than the St. John's Fisher slick attackman, you know, it just paid dividends over time. And then Mac Radel, like, if we're talking player of the year, I think it's going to be pretty difficult to justify anybody else on the offensive side of the ball. You know, 12 points in this game and being guarded by a very good defender. Kyle Rochester's a multi-time teamer. So, like, you know, just a really impressive performance there. And then, yeah, you hit it. I do want to give a quick shout out to Ian Evans and Nicholas Miller. Evans, who, you know, is younger, he'll come back next year. Miller, whose career is done, but he finishes with 365 points as the Empire 8 conference leader. And that's on 240 goals, which is also a conference leading record. And then fortunately, his career at St. John Fisher is over, but his lacrosse career is not, as he was an NLL draft pick. And to be totally honest, especially with all the player movement going on right now, I would not be surprised at all if he gets a shot in the PLL as well. You know, he's a guy that can win matchups and stretch shoot, which in the PLL, you can do those two things. You can get yourself on the field.
Definitely. Yep. And, you know, we have been seeing a lot of movement on these PLL rosters, like you were saying. So hopefully he can kind of, you know, sneak on one of these rosters and play himself onto a spot. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. You know, he gets a chance in minicamp, shows up, scorches a few nets because, like, I mean, he has an absolute cannon. Like, 100 miles an hour on a lacrosse ball on one field is 100 miles an hour on a lacrosse ball on another field. And if you don't know where it's going, it's hitting the back of the net. You know, like, I really think if he gets a shot at camp, he's going to be able to turn some heads and maybe end up catching the roster spot.
Definitely. Yep.
All right. And let's keep moving from this one. Obviously, we're going to hit more on Tufts, and so I wanted to quickly work in those shout-outs for Fisher, who we, unfortunately, are done talking about. Still alive to talk about, though, CNU 21, Wesleyan 8, and this was a good old-fashioned romping.
Yes, yes. This was another one that I thought maybe Wesleyan could kind of show what this offense has been talking about, you know, all year, and show it up against a good team. And yeah, CNU showed why they're the number one ranked defense currently that we have. So props to them.
Yeah, and they've been number one for quite some time now too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they were, you know, stout, forced a bunch of turnovers. The team, I think, I have to double check, but off the top of my head, I think it was the team created 22 turnovers in the game. CNU's defense did, which is just insane. And then you had Ryan Young, who had a 9 ground ball, 5 cause turnover game. So he alone was wreaking havoc. And then Hines had 4 cause turnovers. Wayne had 4 cause turnovers. Like, their guys were just, I mean, NCAA play, and the best of the best showed up for them. So, you know, props to it. They were in a situation, you know, where the day before they kind of got, you know, a little bit of a lighter game and were able to rest guys a little bit earlier than Wesleyan, who was in a barn burner all the way through. And, you know, like, in those situations, and we saw it a couple different instances. I think it happened with Western New England. Like, they put all their stock into beating Lynchburg on day one. So then day two, you know, not a great showing, weren't totally super prepared. Same thing with MIT Amherst, who we're going to get to next, or I should say MIT RIT, who we're going to get to next, but MIT probably had all of their eggs in that Amherst basket in terms of scout, and then figure we'll let it fly on day two and, you know, roll out what we can. And you have to, otherwise you're not going to end up living to see day two anyways. So, like, what's the point, you know? And so I think we had a little bit of that go on with Wesleyan as well, where they were, you know, really focused forward on RPI, getting through day one, and then, you know, let it fly on day two with CNU.
Definitely, yep. And, you know, our RPI is one of those teams that you can't take lightly and kind of overlook. So, you know, you kind of have to do it the way you're talking about. And, you know, like you said, you know, you got to win day two to get to day three. So you got to put all your eggs in that basket if that's what you got to do. So, you know, they got there. Props to them for getting there, and props to them for a great season. But yeah, kind of moving forward, like you just hinted on, MIT Amherst, you know, MIT put all their eggs in that basket. You know, we see Brock go down in the first quarter with a hamstring injury, never return, which kind of puts the Mammoths down on one of their best players there. So you get that kind of mixture. And it turns out to be a great game. Not saying that injury, you know, was the reason MIT won the game, because MIT came out and they were awesome. Gebhardt was absolutely electric. He showed why he's been an absolute force for them. And they came out and won that game against a really good Mammoths team. So props to them for winning that. But yeah, I could kind of tell. I think you and I both kind of knew that was kind of everything for MIT there. And RIT has been rolling as of late. So they kind of took it to them like we thought they would. And that 8-0 start for them, and then the 16-1 at halftime, like it was over by then. So props to MIT for a great year. Shout out Gebhardt, absolute stud. And kind of looking to see if MIT can continue this dominance that they've had, and maybe we can continue to be talking about them for years to come.
Yeah, and they're another team. We said it with Dickinson, but if the first loss of your season ends your season, like, you have nothing to hang your head about. It's an incredible year for them. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that does it for the weekend in review. We still have one more game we have to talk about for this round. it's sneaking by us because it's so close to our hearts. And it wasn't played on the same day.
Yeah, they did the old Friday, Saturday.
York 16, Denison 4.
Yep, I mean, didn't catch a ton of this just because it was such a blowout. And, you know, there was a lot of other kind of close games I wanted to keep my eye on. But, yeah, I mean, York is getting hot at the right time. They're a team I don't want to play. I think all three starting defenders were on the All-American list, as well as Jack Michael. So, I mean, you've got a stout defense with York, as we've known. I think we have them, at fourth? For adjusted defensive efficiency this year. Yep. So, you know, they came out, played a solid game plan on D, like they always seem to do, and they held it down pretty good. So looking forward to kind of see them continue this role and into a good Christopher Newport team. You know, it's going to be a really fun game to watch.
Yeah, and then the other big story here, face-off play, Vinny Fassaponte just – I mean, totally dominant at the X. Like, it felt like there were stretches of the game where it was just make it, take it for York, where they would get a good one and then have a good possession, maybe a defensive stop, a goal, face-off win, goal, you know, and not just like not just 6-on-6 goals, like face-off wins that kind of spark forward and create some unsettled situations that they can take advantage of as well. So, you know, really interesting result there. Denison in Grove City the night before, I actually got to catch in person. And again, another situation where Denison was like down to the wire, literally the very last seconds of the game. You know, the game is still at bay. So it'll be, so not totally surprised that on day two, they were, you know, a little bit out of gas or, you know, off of that emotional high of the night before, not ready to, you know, kind of put their best foot forward.
Yep, I can see that there.
And then the other thing that happens in this game, and you can't tell from the box score or anything like that, but the way that York was scoring, like, it felt like they had some serious mojo going. Like, we've talked about, like, shooting in the past, where it's like if they have a game where they get hot shooting and the defense is rolling, like, they could beat anybody. They had that game, except they would have won regardless of if the shooting was hot because, like, they were just a better team and more prepared on that night. But if they shoot the way that they did in that Denison game against anybody in the country, like, you could be looking for a good game there.
Definitely. Yep.
All right. Now I think we officially have hit our games in review. Boom, boom, boom. So those winners, the eight that we just discussed, make our final four. We'll have two site locations, one up at RIT in Rochester, one down at CNU in Newport News. The four teams heading to CNU will be obviously them with Gettysburg, Union, and York. While on the other side, you'll have Salisbury, Tufts, RIT, and Bowdoin all fighting it out. And man, this weekend is going to be electric.
Mm. I can't wait. I'm so excited for this.
All right. So this is funny because it's on the outline. So it literally says, I'm putting you on the spot, which means I can't really be putting you on the spot that much because it's on the outline. So all you had to do to be prepared was read our doc here. But my question for you before we go into the preview, if you were the committee, like, you were the emperor of the committee. You had final say in anything that happens. It could be the Caleb Big Dog committee. Who would have had the higher seed, Salisbury or CNU?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Big Dog committee does sound pretty good, by the way, just throwing that out there. But yeah, you know, if I got to pick, I think I would still keep CNU as the higher seed over Salisbury. I mean, I know they got the last laugh there with the C to C championship win. But if you just look at the seasons overall, like, CNU was the better team throughout the year. Like, they had dominant performance after dominant performance, whereas Salisbury, you saw them slip up against the Cabrinis. You know, they had a couple close games against, I don't even remember the team name because it wasn't a notable team. So, you know, they definitely had some instances where they slipped up here and there. So if you're looking at it through an overall season perspective, I think CNU definitely deserves that number one spot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I kind of put that in there to trick you into hopefully saying that Salisbury did so that I could take the approach that you just did. But you passed the test, so congratulations. Good job.
Oh, man, yeah. I never need a test to give Salisbury extra love. You know that's never coming.
Yeah, that's probably true. The other thing, like, I mean, we said it last time, but number of championships, like, isn't on the criteria. So It kind of makes sense that they were over there. And then in terms of, like, just overall the season of work, you know. And in the first game, Salisbury loses by 10. And in the second, CNU loses by 5. So, like, maybe even just considering, like, the goal discrepancy in those two games. I don't know.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think there's a ton of stats you could pull that are all favored towards CNU if you just look at this year's stats alone.
Well, that kind of sets the table for, you know, the precedent on how exactly these brackets played out. The first one, we'll head to CNU and York. Then we'll work down. We'll go Gettysburg, Union, knocking off the left side. Then we'll go back up to the top. We'll hit RIT Bowdoin. Then we'll come back down and we'll hit Salisbury Tufts to polish off, which for me is just like, I could not be more excited for that one.
Mm-hmm. Same here. That's my game of the week.
All right. So let's start, though, with our Spartans and CNU. Immediately, you just have to kind of go back and consider how familiar these teams are with each other. Have played each other a bunch. The coaching staffs are familiar. So, you know, kind of like we were saying with Gettysburg and Dickinson, the familiarity just can be a, you know, a blessing for someone or a big-time curse for another team. So, it'd be interesting to see exactly how that familiarity plays out. And then I really feel like, though, this one is going to be just down to whichever team kind of makes the nitty-gritty plays in the middle of the field. You know, like if CNU can turn York over in the middle of the field the way that they've turned over other teams versus, you know, those York D mids like legging balls out and, you know, making those tough kind of nitty-gritty plays in the middle of the field, I think that's going to be where this game is decided.
Definitely, yeah. So I have two questions for you here, Dan, just because you've been watching both these teams, breaking a lot of things down this entire year. So you were at that scrimmage that you just touched on where it was CNU versus York. I think it was at Towson, I believe. But what did you see between those two teams? I mean, I know it was a scrimmage in the preseason. I think it was they had two or three games that day, and it was got pushed because of rain or snow. But, like, what did you just see out there? What do you think we're going to be kind of seeing for this matchup here on Saturday?
Yeah, it is kind of amazing that, you know, 3 months later, 4 months later, whatever it is, we're sitting here and I was all excited for that scrimmage and now I'm all excited for this exact same matchup, but in the Elite Eight, you know, it's crazy. That day was really interesting. York was Gunnar Reynolds and Dylan Wolfless with injuries, so it was a little bit interesting watching that offense go up against the CNU defense that we've said, you know, is pretty good. It ended up being a closer game, I feel like, on score than I remember it being in truth, where it felt like CNU was kind of the dictator of tempo and all that type of stuff in that game. And then kind of like we said, they were all in the middle of the field and, you know, forcing some turnovers and hitting in transition in the ride and all that type of stuff. I do remember in that game, Jack Michael got really hot. Like, perhaps it's a situation where he's, you know, going to be comfortable going into that game with those shooters because he had that game with the scrimmage where he got, you know, he was on fire. And so it could be interesting to see how that plays out. CNU that day, though, like, their energy and enthusiasm was just like off the wall. Like, they were off the charts. And it kind of showed, like, they were played a bit faster, played with a little bit more pep. And, like, I don't know, maybe to your point, like, that being a scrimmage that, you know, York doesn't have that, you know, disadvantage going into it being a NCAA quarterfinal game.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. And then to my second point there, that's some good analysis there. What do you think Salisbury kind of did to expose CNU in that first matchup that you think York can kind of replicate in this game?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because those defenses are very different defenses. Like, Salisbury's a bit slower, like we were saying, like more to hold matchups and, you know, shut someone off, slide adjacent, do a whole bunch of stuff like that that York doesn't do. And if I'm York, I don't think I'm going to go just like steal another team's game plan that suits their personnel versus going with a game plan that just like suits my personnel better and sticking to our principles that got you there in the first place. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what they do. You probably can go to it to look at potentially matchups, like maybe based on that game, who specifically should be guarding who based on skill sets on similarities between your guys and the Salisbury guys. So perhaps that helps, but I think from like a scheme perspective, I would kind of be surprised if we end up seeing them go and steal that too much.
Yeah, no, those are some great points, Dan. I think you hit the nail on the head for both those, and this is, you know, definitely going to be one that I'm going to be watching, you know, while at the wedding this weekend, so can't wait for it.
Yeah, I found a way to watch the York Cabrini game during Patrick's wedding, so I trust you.
I'll be able to make it happen, don't worry.
All right, and let's keep it moving. Let's go to Gettysburg and Union. And let me first say this about Union, because I had to bite my tongue when you were starting to hit it when we were talking about them in the first, earlier in the episode here. But I've talked to two people who are pretty close to the program at Union. And I can tell you firsthand, they have heard the noise about like Union got the easy path and Union got a break. Union doesn't have to see Salisbury or Tufts. And like I'm telling you now, they're like an old team with graduate students that right now is playing with a chip on their shoulder that like I definitely would not want to see. Like two people that don't even know each other that have Union ties have said, like, I'm telling you, like, this team is playing with a chip and like they're playing angry and they like are feeling like they're under deserving, like they're not getting enough credit. And like they keep saying, like, yeah, everybody keeps saying Tufts is on that side. And kind of like we were saying with CNU Salisbury, like, you could argue one of them should be on the other side. Like, maybe you think Tufts should be on the other side for Union, and Union's like, okay, well, we beat them. Like, we beat that Tufts team that everybody keeps talking about, you know, like, so they're a weird, interesting group right now that, you know, like, I would not want to see in this type of a scenario.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just taking a whole look at the bracket as a whole, like, you know, if I had to pick one of these final four games to be playing in, I would probably have to say that this is the one I'd be wanting to play in, you know, just looking at all these matchups. But that's not to take away anything from these teams that, you know, these are both great teams that are deserving of being where they are. But look, I think Gettysburg is here because they've played Dickinson three times, and they got the best of them in the third time, which it's hard to beat a team three times in a row. So I think Gettysburg kind of benefited from that, but, you know, they came out and can play hard. But they have our team that we have seen some up and downs from this year. So, you know, if I'm looking at this game right now and I'm Peter Burns, I'm pretty pumped up. I'm ready to go out there and get after it. I think Union does come away with this. I think they're the better, more talented team, and they have been throughout this entire year. I think Gettysburg can make it close with McMillan making some saves, but that's all going to be about what kind of shots the defense is letting them see. You know, if we're getting to 7-7, if we're getting up and tight and banging the ball around, it's going to be a long day for Gettysburg. Whereas if they can kind of limit those shots and make Union kind of take some more contested shots that McMillan can save, we might see it be a little bit of a closer contest. So we'll kind of have to see how it plays out, but end of the day, I think Union comes away with this one and gets to advance to the semifinals.
Yeah, and I just think that like the chip that they're playing with on their shoulder right now, and like the sentiment that I'm hearing out of that program over there, that like they're playing angry, they're playing with focus, like they're hitting this week of practice with like intention, like Gettysburg is coming off of a big high, having won that game and like coming out and beating a team that had beat them a couple times this year. And like, I think they're just like in a happier place than Union, that is feeling like they're being disrespected by people not giving them enough credit and not like loving them up enough.
Yeah, that's a dangerous squad to be feeling underappreciated and undervalued, because
they literally had grad students that came back like just for this, you know, like you have the choice, like come back, give it one more roll, and like we get into the tournament and we just give ourselves the best chance possible and like fight it out. You know what it sounds like? This 2018 Amherst that, like, or excuse me, 2018 Cabrini that beat Amherst in the national championship, that just like their seniors played like they were pissed off. That team lost to both York and Salisbury in the regular season, and then in back-to-back weeks in the NCAA play, beat both of them, and just like got hot at the right moment, played with the chip, and then ended up holding a national championship at the end of the year.
Yep. Yep, that's the way to do it. I mean, you know, you don't have to maybe be necessarily the more talented team. You just gotta get hot at the right time, and it seems like Union's kind of doing that.
Winning preparation week is a huge key to it. Winning preparation week is, you know, dependent on maturity. It's dependent on your focus, and it sounds like they've got both of those things going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, especially with all those grad students, you know, they're going to have everybody locked in.
All right. So let's go ahead and we'll bounce over to, we'll stay in the Liberty League. We're going to go to the other side of the bracket, though. So that's kind of going to do it for our CNU York and our Gettysburg Union matchups, which obviously the winners play the next day. Whoever ends up advancing to those games, like, you can count on that one just being, I don't even know. I don't even have the words to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, before we move on here, I'm just going to take a quick stab at a prediction, because why not? I'm going to throw in Union, and, you know, my heart's telling me Union versus York for the semifinals. York finally breaks into the semifinals, and give me York going away with it to the national championship. Call me a homer, call me whatever you want, but that's what I got.
I filled out two brackets before the season. I filled out a heart
that
bracket.
Was smart.
A heart bracket and a brain bracket. My heart bracket obviously has York going all the way. My brain bracket did not. But my heart bracket is what's more important, obviously.
Of course. We can't have a podcast as two York guys and not pick them when they're in the Elite Eight. Like, come on.
Of course. And, I mean, more importantly, like, we talked about Union having this, like, chip on their shoulders. I think York has it as well, like, underdogs going into this game. I feel like they've, you know, been in a situation where they've been ranked high all year, but teams have been like, they don't belong there. They don't have that great of a win. Our efficiency metrics, if you look at those and you put those in sorted by the efficiency combined, it has York favored by the least by like a slight margin compared to Bowdoin, but Gettysburg, who they beat, is above them. So like, you know, there's in a situation too as well where they're probably feeling like for the first time in a while they're the underdogs, and they, you know, are probably by popularity standpoint thinking that they're going to lose, like being told they're going to lose. So like, you know, they're another team that with age and experience and as an underdog and a chip on their shoulder, like, I'm not sure I'd want to see them either.
Exactly. Yep. You bring up a good point there. And this is kind of the Elite Eight bump that York has kind of not been able to get over since even we've been there. You know, we've kind of been able to get there, what is it, three or four times now since 2016, and just kind of haven't been able to break through to that Final Four. So really looking forward to seeing if this could be the year.
You got it. Bingo. All right, so before we, you know, spend too much more time talking about our Spartans here, let's go ahead. We'll shift over. We're going to head north. We're heading to RIT, heading up to Rochester, and we're going to talk about them and Bowdoin. And my first instinct on this one, I have one note written here, and it's, I hope that the Bowdoin defense is in the lab this week.
They are going to need to be. Man.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see how they try and match up. right now, we've talked about a bunch of the metrics, a bunch of different efficiency metrics. We said that York and Bonin are kind of the two that are closest together, and they happen to be in the seventh and eighth spot, with Bonin just narrowly edged above them. The weird part of that is that their defense is ranked as the 40th defense in the country according to adjusted metrics. So, you know, that's by far the lowest rating out of any team with any spot, you know, of anything that's left. And so it'd be interesting to see, you know, exactly what they can do to mitigate that intense RIT offense.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to need to bring their A game if they're going to want to stand a chance in this game. You know, they've given up a lot of shots, and Hobbs has been great for them, but he's going to absolutely need to stand on his head if they want to be in this one. So defense needs to be working on, you know, limiting those RIT shots and only giving them things that, you know, Hobbs feels comfortable with. And then Hobbs is going to need to come in knowing he's going to need, I would say, 25 saves, I would say, about, in order to come away with this win. So we'll have to see if he's up to the task for it.
And what'll be interesting is they're going to have to ride that line of, like, they have tons of possessions. Like, they play a pretty fast pace. And so they're going to have to find that line of, they want to push, they want to play early offense, they want to go quickly. And they want to do that, especially knowing that if they score, there's a high chance they get the ball back, because I think Ethan Barnard's going to have the edge at the faceoff X. So with those two things in mind, like, you're going to want to push, but at the same time, you can't afford to have too many turnovers in a row. You can't afford to have too many quick possessions. Otherwise, your defense down the other end is just going to slowly break down. And especially if you're asking them to defend that RIT offense a whole ton. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how they ride that wave of, we want to push transition, we want to play fast, we want this early offense, but we can't afford to give RIT it back right away, and we can't afford to ask our defense to play too much on that side of the ball.
Yeah, but hey, all of this is a moot point too if they can't clear the ball, which we've seen them struggle with in big games. So are they going to be able to get it over the midfield line and get it into the offensive zone? That's going to be another question.
Hey, they were 100% on Sunday.
100%. Okay.
24-24, if I recall. I mean, I remember checking that after the game to see what the difference was.
Okay.
I also don't know that St. Lawrence pressure rode the same way that that Tufts was. And in that moment, Tufts actually wasn't even really riding with a whole ton of pressure. They were kind of in a deep drop, and it was just interesting that they were so pressed on throwing the ball over the midline rather than running it over it. But anyways, they ended up fixing that. So they're already a step ahead of you.
Yeah. It's so important to get those hard rides in early and make the defense kind of second guess themselves on the clearing game. So, you know, Tufts, as we talked about it last week, you know, Bowden struggled early in the clear game, and that kind of led throughout the whole game of the clearing game struggling for him. So if RIT can kind of do the same, it's going to be a long game for Bowden. But hey, it sounds like they kind of maybe have cleared up some of those some of that down there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, to your point, though. It'll be interesting if RIT tries to take that page out of Tufts' books and, you know, try and put something in that's going to allow them to ride it back. And then another kind of storyline here, we've said a couple times at this point, Moline being injured. So it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully he's healthy and how he can impact the game. But, you know, that matchup with him and probably Brett Naylor is who we would see guard him. That would be, you know, I would be really interested in, one of those best attackman versus defenseman matchups that we'll see this weekend.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. This is definitely going to be a tight one.
Yeah, so excited for this one. Potentially going to be catching it in person. We'll have to see exactly where I end up, but regardless, that one will be, you know, just crazy. And then we said we're going to finish with it. The big one, the one that I'm just fired up for. These two teams, they've been in national championships against each other. You probably never really imagined a scenario, especially if you're a D3 lifer that has been so accustomed to the North and South regions being the winner of the North plays the winner of the South, and that's how it is. And thus, like, Salisbury is going to be that Southern team, like, 99% of the time. So there's never going to be a situation where they could play, like, early in the tournament. And then, boom, now you have 2022 come around. You have five regions, and these two teams are squaring off in the Elite Eight. Like, this one is just – it's got to be shocking for those guys, too.
Oh, man. Yeah, they all got to kind of be excited for it. This is just such an interesting matchup that I didn't think we'd be seeing, you know, at this point in the tournament. But I'm just so excited for it. I mean, you got the best offense. You got historically one of this, you know, one of the most stout defenses and teams in general, just going head to head. It's going to be awesome. You know, Salisbury has to go up there, travel north a little bit into their territory. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I'm really excited for it. I personally think, you know, just analyzing goalie play and looking at the game kind of from that perspective, I think Tufts is going to kind of be too much. I think, I think they've been a little rocky there in the goal. And I think it's going to be a lot on that defense to kind of limit the Tufts shots to savable looks. And I don't think they're going to really be up to the task for it. So if you ask me, I think it's going to be an electric game. You know, we're probably looking at, you know, maybe a 16-15, 16-14 type game. But, you know, I probably have Tufts coming away with it in the end.
Yeah, so that's all well said. This is the only matchup of the weekend that's previously determined here, where we have two teams that are in the top 10 of both offense and defense going at it. We only have four teams left that fall in those categories, and that's Tufts, Salisbury, RIT, and CNU, the first three of which are all in the same side of the bracket. So only one of them will be advancing. And in this instance, we have two of them squaring off against each other. And so it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, a few breaks here and there, especially early, are going to be huge. If Tufts can jump up on them and put Salisbury in a situation where now they have to play at that tough speed, it can be, you know, really, really beneficial for Tufts. And vice versa, if Salisbury can get up and slow the pace down and really, like, make their possessions count and work shot clock, and then, you know, Tufts is going to be in a situation where they find themselves quickly out of their comfort zone. So two, like, very opposite types of pace to this game and these teams. Salisbury, who wants to be deliberate and throw a whole bunch of body shots throughout a game, versus Tufts, who's like jab, 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 uppercut, you know, jab, jab, uppercut, right hook, you know, and it's just like they're constantly throwing haymakers, you know, with balance passes or skip or, you know, a backhand feed to someone popping behind you, like all these things that, like, Salisbury, you know, it's a little bit more of a disciplined brand and style of ball on the offense. So, like, opposite kind of conflicting styles there. The other thing that I think is going to be really interesting about this one is the Salisbury offense and those, specifically their stretch shooting versus that Tufts defense. And, you know, you talked about creating savable shots. Well, you know, the zone is going to leave stretch shooting, and I don't know for sure, we'll find out, but I don't know that those are savable shots for Garzon right now. You know, like, he's been a little bit better as of late, but the Salisbury guys can really, really bring it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be looking forward to kind of seeing how Ferreira works that zone and if he can kind of find his way in it.
It's interesting, you know, like, the ball goes into Bradall's stick, you know, just about every possession for the Jumbos, whether the team's in off end zone or man, you know, and if it's man, he's looking to win a matchup and find feeding lanes or, like, work your hot guy and just kind of manipulate your hot guy into being able to shoot off someone's hip. And if the other team shows zone, he goes up to the front of the goal. He gets up in the top of, like, a 3-3, and he's looking to distribute. It'll be interesting to see how Salisbury handles it. And, you know, obviously when they see lots of zone, or lots of man, excuse me, Ferreira does a whole ton of dodging and is looking to win matchups. I'm not sure that we've seen this year Salisbury really have to see, like, a really good zone. And so it'll be interesting to see exactly what they do and, you know, where they move him, if they have him attacking a short stick on the corner, or exactly if they're going to use him, you know, potentially as a feeder the way that Tufts use Bradall. Like, I'm not sure. We'll have to find out.
Yeah, yeah. It's all going to be exciting to see. I can't wait for it.
And then we also have, you know, in this weekend on the defensive side of the ball, we have Wayne and Kennedy squaring off, where both of those guys drafted to the PLL. They're the returning co-defensive players of the year. Both of them like split it last year. I don't really see a scenario in which they don't split it again this year. And then down on the other side, you have Ferreira and you have Salisbury Tufts, where you have Ferreira at attack and you have Bradle at attack on the other end. So two interesting tales where you have one side of just some stout, just incredible defenders. And then on the other side, you have probably the two leading candidates for offensive player of the year.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome to see. I can't wait for it, Dan.
All right. And so before we go here, I'm going to have to put you on the spot one more time here. Where do I go this weekend? If you had the vote, if you were in my spot and I had a wedding and you had to go rep IO at one of these spots, regardless of the Ken Stockman knowledge.
Oh, okay. My heart says I got to go south. I got to go down south, head to CNU, watch the boys play. Watch a great Gettysburg Union game. I think that's where my heart lies personally. But you really can't go wrong. I think you kind of make it something like a guess where Dan is thing. So like maybe on your road trip you could do some like pictures of some scenery or some places you're stopping, and we can all kind of guess on where you're going.
What if I fooled you guys? Like take some pictures from that I took last year while I was in Rochester and post those, and then just suddenly I'm in Newport News.
Yep, that would be funny.
All right. Well, before we let the people go, do you have any more thoughts, closing thoughts on games we saw last weekend, or any preview thoughts before we head off and, you know, let the people go here?
I think we covered everything pretty well. You know, this has been an awesome tournament. I think, you know, as it's played out, the committee showed they made some right picks here, and they had some good teams show up, and we saw some upsets, we saw some dominant victories, we saw some close games. So we've kind of seen it all with this tournament. So absolutely loved it. Can't wait for the finale here, and it's just been a pleasure covering it with you.
Super, super well said. Excited to see how it all plays out this weekend. We will obviously come to you guys again for next weekend with a preview of these Elite Eight and semifinal games, and then a preview of the national championship game, which will be set at that point. And like you said, it's bittersweet getting down here to the end. You know, it's been a really fun ride this season. We appreciate all you guys who have been listening and following along and engaging on Twitter. You know, like, you guys make this really fun, and ultimately you guys are a big reason for why we're doing it. You know, D3 fans and alumni making access and coverage easier and more fun for you guys. That is our main motivation. We hope we're doing that for you. You know, if we are, give us a like, a listen, a subscribe, and, you know, maybe a share to a couple of friends so we can keep boosting these numbers and justifying all this extra time and all of these, all this extra love that we try and get to D3 Nation.
Yep, it's been an absolute pleasure. And like I said, you know, I would be doing this if it was just you and I talking back and forth about some D3 lacks. So I love it, but I love all the interaction that we get and can continue it. But, you know, absolutely love D3 lacks, and it's been a joy covering it with you this year.
All right. So with that said, we'll let you guys go. Thanks again for sticking around. Thanks again for listening.
Peace. Rinse out, drop. Love y'all.